Thank you for joining us for KGVM Bozeman's ongoing coverage of the 2019 Bozeman municipal election. On Wednesday, October 30th, the Bozeman for CDOT initiative held a forum for the city commissioner and mayor candidates. They were given some questions up front to answer, and then they were allowed to answer questions presented by the audience. Please enjoy this, and remember that KGVM does not endorse any candidate or take sides on any ballot issue or measure. We are simply attempting to provide you with as much information as we can to help you make your decisions in the upcoming election.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Roxanne Klingensmith, and I'm going to moderate this forum tonight, and it's indeed my pleasure to do so. I also should say that I've been on the steering committee for the CDAW initiative, which is probably the foundation for what we're doing tonight, and I'll say a little bit more about that. So this is a candidates forum, engaging the community, you, on themes of equality, fairness, and social justice. And I want to say something about our sponsors. The sponsors tonight are support of the Bozeman United Methodist Church, which you're in, the Bozeman Business and Professional Women, Bridger Care, Child Care Connections, Gallatin Sunrise Movement, Montana Chapter of Now, MSU's F-Word, and MSU's Heart Initiative. Okay, we won't say any more about that. There are copies with each of you of the Voter's Guide tonight, and to save time, I'm not going to read everything in it, and I'm going to refer you to it, okay? So I do want to say something about CDAW, and CDAW stands, in this case, for Cities Against, for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women and Girls. So that is what CDAW stands for. Also, KGVM is going to be recording this event this evening, and on their Facebook page, they will be announcing when they're going to broadcast this very forum. So if you miss something that somebody said, you'll be able to pick it up on that site. Also, we're going to have some rules and regulations about tonight. And the reason we do that is so that we can get to know the candidates. We're all here to hear them, and so I'll have something to say about that too. So in front of you or with you is the voter's guide. So we asked the candidates 7 questions, and they're going to be addressing one in particular tonight of their choice, but I'd like you to refer you to the voter's guide, and you can see what those questions were, rather than me standing up here and reading them. I think that's a much more efficient use of time. So I want to start this evening by introducing the candidates, and I also want you to give them a big round of applause, because these people are running for office. And I ran for office some years ago. It's a lot of work, but it is somebody who has great passion for what they believe in and for service to the community. So I'm going to begin with Brian Lemires. Did I pronounce it right?
You did. Thank you. Good.
Brian Lemires and Cindy Andrus. These two are running for mayor. And then we have Michael Wallner, Zach Crum, and Mark Egge, and they're running for the commission. Would you give them a big round of applause, please? So to begin tonight, I am going to carve out the format and the rules for you so that you know kind of how we're operating tonight. And the candidates, by the way, have received a copy of all of this. And so it gets a little involved, but stay with us, it'll be just fine. So each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to introduce him or herself. And basically, this is around, this is why I'm running for office, this is what I want to do, that kind of thing. So they have 2 minutes to do that. And then they're going to be asked to answer other questions. There are 3 of them tonight. And the rules around that is that there will be 2 minutes for the first question and a minute for rebuttal time. So if Zach wanted to rebut something that Michael said, and he has his time. Zach will have 30 seconds to do that. And then subsequent questions will be timed at 1.5 minutes for the answer and 30 seconds for rebuttal time. Now, how are they going to know the time? Well, we happen to have timers right up here. And so 1 minute, 30 seconds, and you're done. But here's the deal. If you're still talking, you finish, and then you sit down. So we even have one that says you're over 15 seconds, right? Okay. So that's pretty important. And then the forum will then be open to questions from you. And I would really ask you to stick to the subject at hand tonight. You can look at the guide so you get a really good feeling for what this is about. But if we, because we're going to run till 8:30, probably 8:20, and then we're going to stop for their closing statements, then if we have time, then you can begin to ask other questions of them around your concerns for the city of Bozeman. But do keep your questions until, you know, to the subject, please. And then at the end, they'll have 1 minute for a closing statement. Here's something that I want to read to you. These are rules around how the evening operates. The timer will let each candidate know when he or she has 1 minute remaining, 1.5 minute, and then no time. After the opening statements and pre-assigned 3 questions, the moderator will ask members of the audience to pose questions without comments. Please do not get up and make a speech, because I'll stop you, and I'll say, what is your question? Why? Because although we love you and we're glad you're here, we really want to hear what they have to say, not what you have to say. All right? I will do my best. Raise your hand, and I'll try to go to the first person, you know, and the next person, do the best I can. If I mess up, don't get too mad. If a member of the audience asks that a question be answered yes or no, the candidates will be allowed to qualify or explain their answers. So you don't have to answer yes or no, or you could say yes and explain. So we don't want you to be put into a position to not be able to explain why you are answering yes or no. If questions or answers become repetitive or courtesy is not shown, the moderator will intervene. Now, I want to tell you, I've done a lot of these, and I'm not afraid. So please, 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 please show courtesy. And if you really are kind of put out or whatever, please address that to the individual or whatever later. But we really want to keep the process very civil, very civil. The order of answering will be random according to a formula. So I'm going to show you my little formula. Here it is. I got a formula for everything. So every one of these people have a number, and that's what I'm going to be going by, so that we don't have the same person starting every time, and we mix it up a little bit. So expect that. And I do want to advise you that voting will occur on November 5th, and I'll have a little bit more to say about that at the end of the evening. And again, we are so glad that you turned out on a kind of a cold evening. Anybody cold? I mean, really, October 30th? Although I do remember a Halloween that was 28 below zero some years ago. So maybe we won't have that. Anyway, so read your voter's guide, please. In the voter's guide, the questions were asked, and you will find their answers. And yes or no, because that's all we asked. So tonight, they're going to have a little opportunity to explain why they said yes, or why they wanted a little bit more conversation. So that is definitely in your hands. So again, thank you all very much for coming, and we're going to begin the forum right now. And so the opening statements begin this way. I'm going to start with Brian and Cindy, and then we're going to go to Michael, and then Zach, and then Mark on the opening statements. Now, if you forgot that already, I'll remind you, all right? So would you, and there is a mic for you, and you can sit or stand, whatever you're most comfortable. Maybe it would be nice to stand.
Okay. All right. Can everybody hear me without this? Is that all right? Okay. All right. Well, good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming out. I'm Ryan Lemires, running for mayor. Absolutely nothing against Cindy. I like Cindy. She's a very nice person. I'm born and raised in Montana. Lived here all my life. Came here to go to school back in 85 to MSU. Graduated from there. Decided I wanted to live here really bad and couldn't find a job right away to satisfy my CPA license credentials. So I was waiting and waiting, and I worked in the service industry and lived in a mobile home for 4 years until I finally got a job with the city. So I'm a city employee. I've been there for 23 and a half years. And I watch every city commission meeting every Monday night on TV. And slowly over time, I just got to thinking that some of the things that were happening just were kind of rubbing me the wrong way. And I thought, a common theme is I just didn't feel that the voice of the people was being adequately heard. I'd hear things outside that people, why did they do this? Why did they do that? And here we go. 1 minute left. So I'm more or less about the process and rather the how rather than the what. I think all the issues that, whether it be growth or affordable housing or taxation, sustainability, gender pay, those are all great issues. I think in a lot of them we're making headway in the right direction in a lot of them. I'm more about making sure your voice is heard along the way, making sure that we get along with the other governments. I think we had a missed opportunity with the county, with the Shared Law and Justice Center, just things like that. Roxy said we don't want to hear what you have to say, we want to hear what we have to say. But going forward, I mean, and throughout my campaign, I want to hear what you have to say. And I know she didn't mean it that way, but because it's all about you. It's not about me. It's making sure that what you want to get done gets done. So thank you. I appreciate your vote.
Hey, Cindy.
I am going to sit. Can you all see me all right if I sit? Thank you. Well, I appreciate all of you coming out tonight, especially considering the competition we have with the seventh game of the World Series going on. So I very much appreciate you being here. But I'm Cindy Andrus. I may not sound like Cindy Andrus tonight. I have a really bad cold. But I have had the pleasure of serving on the Bozeman City Commission for, it will be 10 years now. I've served 8 as a commissioner and the last 2 as your mayor and been very honored to do so. I was appointed when I first began. I was then I ran twice. I've won 2 elections, and again served as 8 years as a commission, 2 years as the mayor. I've served on 3 state boards. I've been appointed by 3 different governors to serve on state boards, and I've chaired 2 of those. I currently serve on 3 national boards. Two of them are art boards, and one of them is the board of the National League of Cities, which I'm very proud to be on. So why does that matter? Well, to me, it matters because I think experience is about understanding issues, it's about understanding process, and it's about building relationships. And I bring all of that process and relationship building to this work. I am a collaborative leader. I'm very willing to listen. I'm also willing to change my mind if there's a better way. And I have the passion to do this work. I love this work. I've been doing it for a long time, and I hope to continue doing it for another 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. My name is Michael Wallner. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. I grew up on a ranch in northern Minnesota. I had 4 older sisters. My parents were small business owners. We would always come out to Bozeman on vacation as kids. So naturally, I came out here for my education at Montana State University. I was also a student athlete at MSU, and of course, just like many here, I love the outdoors, so I stayed in Bozeman. Why am I running? Really, there's 2 reasons why I'm running. First, I care deeply about the future of the Bozeman community, and second, it's because of everybody sitting here tonight. I'm extremely passionate about civic engagement and listening to citizens. My team and I have now knocked on the doors of over 25,000 citizens, and we've done that to hear about your successes as well as your struggles and where we as a local government can make a difference in your life. Experience is really important to me. I've volunteered in over a dozen community service positions here. I've worked for government agencies at the local, state, and federal level of government. My master's is in public policy administration from MSU. My PhD is in public policy administration from Boise State University. I've served in several senior leadership positions throughout my career. I've also served in several mentor-protege roles with leaders here in Bozeman, the state of Montana, the city of Boise, and the state of Idaho. My partner, Erica Chenet, was born and raised here. Her family owned Chenet's Boots and Shoes downtown. We're very integrated into the community, and she's going to be principal of the new Bozeman High School. And like I said tonight, I'm most interested in hearing from all of you the great questions you have, and of course, any concerns that you may have after the forum. I'd love to speak with you all one-on-one. So thank you very much for coming tonight.
Thanks, Michael. My name is Zachary Crum. I'm going to talk a little bit about leadership and what that looks like on the city commission to me. So one thing I've heard a lot the last few months, people say, well, you know, I'm really glad that you're bringing these big ideas to the table, but aren't they a little far-fetched? Well, when I started running, all I heard was, well, you can't do that. It's against state law. It's too big. It's too impossible. But now questions and forums like this one are about how we can get our power back to change things like the minimum wage. I wrote one op-ed a year ago, and I still hear that brought up, and it changed the conversation on housing. I worked with student groups to kickstart a first-of-its-kind renter survey, asking crucial questions that we don't have any answers to, like how often are deposits withheld and for how much. I've had people two states away reach out to me that I don't know to say they're so excited about my original plans for housing and public financing. I've had state legislators, reach out to ask me what kind of housing reform bills they should propose at the state level. I've had people I've never met who don't vote who ask me to share their deeply personal stories because they know that I'll fight for them. And dozens of people who've never even gotten involved in politics, I've had get up at 7 a.m. to go spend hours in the cold for free. And that's with a $3,000 budget being outspent 10 to 1. Leadership to me isn't about volunteering for things that people will see. It's about fighting for people who need it most when nobody's looking. For all of our best intentions, we've had 20 plus years of resumes a mile long and promises that are easy to keep. And I'm not sure things are that much better. I'm already doing the groundwork. And that's why I've already estimated the cost of over 20 particular proposals at the city level that would put millions back in the pockets of Bozemanites and still manage to break even over 10 years. And I've been doing the work, and I want to keep doing the work for the next 4 years, if you'll have me, for all of us in Bozeman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good evening, folks. My name is Mark Egge. I grew up next door in Wyoming, and I came up here as an undergraduate in 2004. And I now have the privilege of working here in Bozeman as a transportation planner, in which I help agencies like the Nebraska Department of Transportation plan for how they will meet their future mobility needs in a world with emerging micromobility and autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles. I'm currently serving with the city as a member of the City Planning Board and on the Parking Commission. And I like to think of myself as a consensus builder, which I think is going to be an increasingly important style of leadership for City Commission to bring us together as a city so we can get out in front of the challenges of being a fast-growing community and ensure that as we grow, we keep the things that we value in common as a community. I'm running for City Commission because I want to ensure that Bozeman is a place where the people who live here can afford to stay here. I worry about my friends like Noah and Lila, who Noah's a carpenter, Lila works for HRDC, and they're one rent hike away from getting priced out of town, and the community will feel their loss. I'm running because I want to see Bozeman become a community that enables people to have different mobility options to get where they need, and so we can scale our transportation system to grow with us. For people like my friend Jamie, who's a professor at MSU and lives in the Northeast neighborhood by me, who most days when she would rather ride her bike to campus, gets in her car and drives and adds traffic to Main Street and takes up parking on campus because there isn't a safe way to get from where she lives to where she needs to go. And finally, for the conservation of open space and functioning ag lands in Gallatin Valley, because that's something that's important to me, and that's something that's important to many across this community. Thank you for being here tonight. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
The first question that they have been asked, and they've been given copies of this, is this. You have previously asked to answer 7 questions, yes or no, for the CEDAW, Cities for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women and Girls Voter Guide. You should please pick one question for which you answered yes, and in a maximum of 2 minutes, explain specifically what actions you would take to accomplish your commitment. You may also use any part or all of your 2 minutes to explain an answer or answers that you think need more clarification than that provided by a simple yes or no. So that is the first question, and we will go to Cindy to begin this session.
Thank you, Roxanne. Well, if you look into the voter's guide, you'll see that I didn't answer any of the questions, yes or no. And I did that because I felt like all of those questions deserved more than a yes or no answer. But I did pick one that I wanted to talk about tonight, and that is question number 4, which talks about a commitment to strengthen the city's resolution on equal pay for equal work, and to address the gender wage gap. And I will talk to you about why I picked that question. First of all, this is a question that's just important to me personally. I think pay equity is something we all should be concerned about and thinking about. Second, I think the city has taken steps to guarantee equal pay for its employees, and I'm very proud of the work we have done, including adopting Resolution 4601, which commits to the collection of data in our organization for analysis and equal pay issues. We identify best practices in our area around equal pay. We evaluate employment practices against the Thrive Index, and we also communicate or commemorate Equal Pay Day as well. We are looking at targeting efforts, so we are attracting, how do we attract women to non-specific, non-traditional jobs, particularly around firefighters and around building inspection. This last September, we passed a budget amendment to bring those that were in the non-union employees up to $14 an hour, and we'll continue to raise that as the years go forward. And going forward, we will be considering a resolution to establish gender pay equity policy for vendors and suppliers. So this resolution would reaffirm the city's engagement in their best practices and require invitation to bid and request for proposals that include reaffirmation of equal pay to those folks. So I'm interested in this issue and happy to talk more about it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, Brian, you are next.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I always get feedback and jittery, but I'll just yell.
Okay. Okay. The question I picked was related to Indigenous Peoples Day and whether will you continue to support the Indigenous Peoples Day proclamation as the newly elected mayor or commissioner and work to make this a permanent policy? And my answer was yes. And when I think of making Indigenous Peoples Day a permanent policy with regard to it being a holiday, I think about making it a real holiday, like the other 10 holidays that we celebrate at the city of Bozeman, where you actually get the day off, right? And the only reason that occurs is because technically we at the city have to follow what's in state law, okay? And right now, Columbus Day is listed in state law as being an official state holiday, but Indigenous Peoples Day is not. So really what we're going to need to do is make the change at the state level in order for it to be a truly recognized, in my opinion. And if you look back just this last spring, it was in front of the legislature, and it did make it through the House, but it was defeated at the Senate. And it was because there were some shenanigans. They were trying to slip it in on a Wednesday, try to make it be a Wednesday before Thanksgiving, with everybody knowing that all government workers who can take off Friday anyway. And so it was turning it into like a 5-day weekend. And so that was probably the main reason. I've been thinking that because of the shenanigans is why it got shut down. But there was also sort of an underlying theme of people saying, yeah, we want Indigenous Peoples Day, but we also want Columbus Day. And so as I researched, I found I have more questions than answers. And I thought that all the younger people were going to be in favor of completely replacing it. But I just talked to one at MSU the other day. So and he wants both. And so I think really what we need to do in order to make sure that we have success at the state is to have the conversation here again.
Thank you very much. All right. The next person is Michael.
Thank you. And I'm going to address the same question as Mayor Andrus. So research has found that Montana women rank near last, 46 out of 50 in the country of all 50 states for equal pay, as well as minorities. That needs to change. We're in the 21st century. This never should have been an issue, and it currently is an issue. Furthermore, at that pace, Montana women will not see equal pay until 2084. So I concur with Mayor Andrus. One of the things that the city of Bozeman is doing is looking at Resolution 4601. We have great data now to look at equal pay for equal work within the city of Bozeman. Two, I think we need to conduct a study, and perhaps this is the research scientist in me, but I would love to see a private and public partnership of a study here in Bozeman looking at the gender pay equity gap. I think that we need to do that first before we really understand just how bad the problem really is in the Gallatin Valley. And third, I think we need to adopt the CEDA initiatives or Bill of Rights. So in July, I met with Jan Strout. She was incredibly informative about equal pay and equal treatment of women and minorities, and I'm running on this. This is one of my four key campaign issues, and this is personal for me as well. I have four older sisters. They're all very intelligent, independent ladies, and one of them isn't being paid the same as her male counterparts in the private sector, and that's been a frustration for myself as well as for my family. And furthermore, my partner, Erica Shanae, she's going to be principal of the new Bozeman High School. I can't imagine paying her less than her male counterpart just because she's a female. So like I said, I'm running on this. I'm talking about this on the doors. Jan has been extremely helpful and helped educate me on the topic. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay. So Mark, please.
Thanks. So I'd like to first point out that we all agree on this. We all agree on its importance. So I want to talk about how do we achieve these things that are important to us, and to do that by speaking to the question that relates to data collection and performance management, because that ties in closely with what I do professionally. Here's how high-achieving, high-performing public sector agencies achieve their most important goals. First, they clearly define their goals. In this case, maybe it's closing the gender pay gap. It's achieving gender parity in senior leadership roles within the city. Then, we establish metrics to measure our progress towards those goals. And we identify actions that we can take to make progress towards those goals. And then, we set for ourselves targets so we know what it is we're working towards, and we can measure our progress towards those goals and alternatives to enact if we find that we're failing to meet our targets. Currently, the City of Bozeman is in the process of creating performance measures, and I would, as an elected, ensure that that gender, race, and income measures are included with these things that we measure. And the reason for it is that we can only effectively manage what we measure. And what we measure in turn often dictates the outcomes that we achieve. So it's important that we get this right for the sake of accountability, for the sake of transparency, and to make progress towards these very important goals.
One thing I have not been doing very well is rebuttal time, but I think what we'll let Zach go ahead, and then if there's anybody that wants to say something about anybody else, let's do that, okay? This is kind of a new little thing for me to do, so I am learning also. So thanks, Zach. Go ahead, and then we'll do some rebuttal if anybody wants it.
Perfect, thanks. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to talk about something that underpins all of these that I think is crucial to tackle before we tackle any single issue. So I'm doing that. I want to reference a buzzword to hear a lot in housing. We talk about housing, need for housing in Bozeman to be accessible. Has anyone heard that sort of term around housing or other issues? We need accessibility. And I always have a problem with that because there's a difference between opportunity and actual outcomes. And we need a concept of justice in Bozeman that encompasses sexuality, race, class, and gender together. And so we need to do even better than gender equality. And I think it starts at representation. So I've done my homework. We think of ourselves, I think, as a pretty welcoming, progressive city. And I think I'm pretty proud of that. And I think we all are. But let's see how well we're doing exactly. I looked at our 40-plus advisory boards. And of about 180 members, did you know that only a third are women? Less than 5% are renters, even though 60% of Bozeman rents. The average age is over 50. The vast majority are probably higher income folk. You'd have a pretty hard time finding someone of color on most of those boards. We have, of course, city commission seats that don't pay full time and don't have districts, which practically guarantees that working class people can't serve. And I once recently even had a city employee who told me as a Jewish person that on city time that we don't have a white supremacy problem in Bozeman. Well, we've got some problems. We have a lot of talented folks in government that really, really care. But it seems that we can't manage to pick them from the other half. And I don't think we've had even a candidate for them yet where there's been childcare covered. I'm not sure if this one has it or not, but thus far none of them. So my family and many others haven't been able to come. Our public event, our public input events are basically the same. In 1990, the average income of people moving to Gallatin County was about the same as those moving away. Today, it's 40% higher, which means that we're effectively creating a town that's segregated along race, class, and income lines. So we've got to change that. I would change standards for advisory boards, track demographics better for public input, include equality measures as part of quality of life measures at the top level. And finally, I would knock every constituent's door during my entire time, my entire term, to make sure that we're always listening and always valuing justice from the bottom up.
Thank you very much. All right. So now you kind of heard everybody here. Does anybody wish to rebut anything that was said? We'll try to stick to that on the future questions. But anybody want to comment on what anybody has said up here?
My only comment would be related to gender pay is that I think we need to make it clear what we mean by that. Because on Facebook, which is just brutal, I've discovered, people are, when I said that I was in favor of gender pay, a lot of the comments were like, what are you talking about? Where they just think it specifically means a situation where a man and a woman have the exact same job and one of them is being paid more than the other. Now, Michael mentioned a specific example of that. I think the more examples of that we can bring forward, the better. But we also need to be clear that when we talk about gender pay, that's not all that we're talking about. We're also talking about when we look at upper management of an organization, what percentage of those people are men and what percentage are women. So I think the more that we can inform the community about what we're talking about, the more buy-in we're going to get.
Thank you. Anybody else want to make a comment about what has been said up here by anybody who said it? All right, so shall we move on to the second question? And I will remember rebuttal time. All right, so the second question is, do you support raising the minimum wage in our community? To what amount and what specific acts would you take to accomplish this higher minimum wage? And the person who goes first on this is Zach.
Great. The short answer is absolutely. As I've said before, in other forums, a minimum wage that's tied to the cost of housing, so you get paid what it would take to actually afford like a basic apartment, would be $25 an hour in Bozeman. I think we should start at 18 and phase it in aggressively. And you'll probably hear a lot about the impracticality of that. So I'd just like to address that. You know, is it even legal for the city to do? Possibly not. Would it hurt businesses too much? Won't they have to lay people off? Aren't there enough college students to work those jobs? But I would ask if it's right to ask people to live and work here if they can't actually afford to put a roof over their head and meet their basic needs. And further, is it even sustainable for businesses whose profits come not from customers then, but often from underpaying their workers? We say that we don't want to subsidize someone else's wage, but what's happening now in our service industry is that the workers are subsidizing our restaurant bills and our housekeeping and our childcare and a bunch of other things. So if it does turn out to be prevented by state law, I have a plan for that too, by the way. And it's something I'm confident we can get passed because it has bipartisan appeal. The state legislature 20 years ago passed a series of bills that just handicapped local governments. And I think instead of wasting our time trying to lobby for a single issue like a sales tax, that we should put our efforts into something that liberals and conservatives can support. And that's a small government package that brings power back to local government, lets us experiment with policy and holds people accountable at the local level, and lets us do things like having taxing flexibility and setting a minimum wage. I think it's a win for everyone. It would encourage innovation and put responsibility back where it belongs.
All righty. So rebuttal here. Anybody want to comment on what Zach said? Okay. So the next person on question two is Michael.
Thanks. I fully support raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, otherwise known as a livable wage here in Bozeman. As a city, we're already a leader in this front. Within our new budget, we are paying our city employees a minimum of $15 per hour. I think it's very important as we continue to work in the future that we require our vendors also to do so. Second, I think we need to work with state officials, as Zach pointed out, to bring power back to the local level of government. In Montana, this is very challenging for local governments, and if we're able to appeal to state legislators on this topic, this can really give us power in the future to make decisions that are best for the local community, not only on wages, but on property taxes as well. Third, I think one of the most important areas where we can help here as a local government is sector development. So Britt Fontenot, the Director of Economic Development, and David Fine, they're great friends of mine. They're working incredibly hard to bring in high-paying jobs here within the city of Bozeman. That is important that people have that livable wage. And lastly, I think we need the private sector to be a leader. On my campaign, I've hired three people. None of them had jobs, and I have paid them a minimum of $15 an hour and some of them $20 an hour to help me knock on doors and hand out literature. We need leaders in the private sector, and my campaign has done just that. Thank you very much.
Rebuttal. Okay. Mark, you're on.
So just for context, to build on what Zach said, the city does not have the legislative authorization to create a citywide minimum wage. The two mechanisms that the city does have at its disposal to affect wages is first its own policies. So it can choose what it pays its own employees, and it can also stipulate what those who do business with the city must also pay their employees. And I would like to see the city increase its wages to $15 an hour. I'd like to see the city commit to commit to paying its employees the second piece of that is leadership, and I'd like to see the city do more to take a leadership role. I think that the city can demonstrate not only through committing to pay itself and requiring its contractors to pay a livable wage, it can also create a program to recognize employers, large employers like Bozeman Health, that just committed to paying its employees a minimum wage. I think that it could do more to exert a leadership role. And the other half of wages is affordability related to housing and transportation costs, and I hope we have a chance to speak more about that this evening, how the city can also have a role in making sure that Bozeman is an affordable place to live.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
The only thing I would say is, I believe we're actually at $14 an hour on our way to 15, just as a technicality. And then the other thing is, I wasn't real fond of the way that the city implemented the $14 an hour minimum, because in the private sector, you can't do that to just some of your workforce without sort of engendering some dismay or other feelings of, you know, bad feelings with the other people that are down there, you know, or making closer to minimum. So say entry level is $10 and you got some people making 13, 14, 15, 16. All of a sudden you move your entry from 10 to 15. Well, what about those other people? You got to adjust them too, to be fair. And so we just need to recognize that there's more of a cost associated with this when it's done right than just moving up the very bottom. If you want to be ethical and keep your employees.
Thank you. All right. And we will hear from Cindy.
Thank you. Well, I also agree with this question, so my answer is yes. And I think young people, particularly today, face challenge in the economy, having to work several jobs just to be able to get by. But I think it's important, again, to understand our role, and I think this has been already reiterated. Our hands are kind of tied in terms of us being able to raise the minimum wage in our community, but there are things we can do, and I think the things that we are doing is leading by example. And Brian is correct, the actual amount is $14 an hour, and we are working to get that up to $15 an hour. And what he was talking about is called compression, and you have people at the top the gap is compressed when you're paying poor people at the bottom. We recognize that as a city commission, and we are working to remedy that as we look at budgets into the future. The other thing that I think we need to continue to do is work with the legislature to get them to recognize that this is an important issue, and that hopefully they'll be able to make some changes as we go forward, and I'm willing to do that come the next legislative session.
Rebuttal? Anybody? You're on.
Okay. Thank you. I just went for the sake of argument. I just, in an imaginary world, I guess the city has the capability to raise the minimum wage in my scenario. So, yes, I do support raising it, and I would say first and foremost, I would want this to be a community-wide decision. I would want to make sure that all the members of the Chamber of Commerce were involved, all the business owners. It's a lot different for a small business owner versus a large business owner. I mean, if you look at Seattle when they put in the $15 minimum wage there, it actually was for 500 employees or less. I mean, it was $14 an hour, and then if you had health insurance, it was only $12 an hour. So, just some points of fact there. And just for background, right now the minimum wage in Montana is at $8.50, set to go to $8.65 in 2020, and that's compared to $7.25 at the national level. At the national level, there was the Raise the Wage Act that just made it through the House in the summer, and that was to gradually get federal minimum wage up to $15 an hour by 2025. We also have for when you say the $15 is the living wage for Bozeman, the MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has a living wage calculator, and they only put it down around 13. But so anyway, I took those statistics into play, and then I can, and with the Raise the Wage Act, and so I said that starting in 2020 we go to $10 an hour, and then over and by 2023 we're up to $15 an hour. That's 2 years ahead of the Raise the Wage Act, and it's also above the MIT living wage calculator. So slowly but surely we put it into play. We want to have some tied to some sort of economic indicators. Those that if the bottom fell out, it's not going to bankrupt a business. But thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal. Anybody up here?
I want to add something. Not necessarily directed at Brian, but I've looked at living wage data in quite a bit of detail just to reemphasize how much people are struggling here. That figure would probably be for a single person with no children. And housing prices are rising so fast that if you look at the cost breakdown for house prices for MIT's data, it's woefully behind. When you actually substitute market rate rents, it's off the charts. It's really, really hard for a lot of folks to get by here. And I think that the 15 an hour disguises it. 15 an hour would have been a good 10 years ago, I think. So.
All right. Thank you. Okie dokie. We're on to the third question. Here we go. What do you see as the advantages of local government, community groups, and religious communities working together? And if elected, how do you see yourself utilizing such partnerships? And we will begin with Michael on this question.
Great. Well, I think it's incredibly important that we have an open, positive, collaborative dialogue with groups throughout the community to solve some of our most pressing issues. I've spoken with Ed Staffman. He's a good friend of mine, Rabbi Ed, and he and I have discussed the impact that the faith communities have, obviously, with the non-discrimination ordinance, HRDC, the Warm Rain Shelter. I mean, these relationships are incredibly important. So what do I bring to the table? When I was at the city of Boise working on my PhD, it was on collaborative governance. Missoula, Seattle, Salt Lake have all created essentially forums, and they're public forums where people can come together once or twice a month. They bring stakeholders of all backgrounds together. I worked with 112 cities throughout Montana, Idaho, Wyoming to implement this process and to really reach common ground and move forward on solutions that are best for the community. Just last week, I toured the warming shelter as well as the food bank. That was a humbling experience. I hadn't done that for several years. And when you see that, then you really understand the need for collaborative governance here in Bozeman and bringing stakeholders together in a public setting where they can both agree and disagree and find innovative policy solutions that will positively impact the future of Bozeman. Thank you.
Any rebuttal? All right. Next, Mark.
As a state that believes in limited local government, as a city, we are reliant on local organizations to do many of the things that in other communities the city might be responsible for. In particular, in this community, the local organizations, they provide services that are not provided by city government that are needed, and they engage citizens. For example, Bozeman is the only community in which I've lived where the trail network isn't something that the city created. It's, with a few exceptions, the trail network that we enjoy here has been created by GVLT and by HOAs. religious organizations are community building institutions. Many of you may have participated in the seat of the table conversation that happened last year, which was a facilitated community-wide organization about our needs and desires as a community, which was implemented in large part by working with the religious organizations in the city. The Wasatch Front is miles ahead of anyone else in the Rocky Mountain West in terms of planning, because they've activated and engaged local churches to help involve the local community in planning. So if I'm elected and I want to see my agenda move forward, it will be a simple necessity to work with HRDC, who provides housing on the lower end of the spectrum, to work with HRDC, who operates our bus system, to work in concert with Gallatin Valley Land Trust to continue to expand our trail system and ensure that some ag land and open space is conserved around the city. It's absolutely essential.
Rebuttal. All right. So next we have Michael. Michael, you already... No.
I went first.
You went first. Sorry.
Yep. Okay. So I don't think I'm going again.
No, I don't think you're going.
If you want me to, I will.
No, I don't want to. No. All right. How about you?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Boy, you know, I've got a bunch of numbers up here, you know, and I'm not a number person. So anyway, thanks for straightening me out. All right. You go.
Okay. All right. I was raised Catholic, and Mom got us to church every Sunday, did a good job of that, and I've kind of failed as an adult, but every now and then we'll put on the video, YouTube, out of Milwaukee, the Heart of the Nation does Catholic Mass every Sunday. And just this past Sunday, during the sermon, there was a statement made, a quote from Pope Benedict that I thought really applied to this question, and it was when Pope Benedict was describing faith and what faith is, and he said that faith is the liberation from a preoccupation with self. The liberation from a preoccupation with self. So when I think of that, I think that's the common thread when you think of from a good public servant or somebody who's involved in a religious community or someone that's in a community service group. You're working for a greater good. You're working for something bigger than yourself, whether you see that as your creator, whether you see that as a greater good. You're working together towards a common good. And I think we definitely need to tap into that. I think to make sure we're playing fair and not picking favorites, we have a strategic plan that identifies 7 vision statements, things like an engaged community, which of course speaks right to this, but other things that help us develop as a community, well-planned city, safe, welcoming community, a sustainable environment, innovative economy. Make sure that whatever those groups that we're working with and collaborating with are also working on things that are helping us all achieve a better city. And in doing that, we can probably not duplicate efforts and have a good time.
Rebuttal. I got it right now. Cindy.
So just in case you forgot the question, what do you see are the advantages of local government, community groups, and religious groups working together? And if elected, how do you see yourself utilizing those partnerships? So I would just say that, there's obviously an advantage to working together. You get a much better product, you have collaboration, you have many more voices at the table and many more brains at the table solving problems. We have seen this in the city with, as has been mentioned, the seat at the table was a really good example. You see that with our current climate plan. We have stakeholder groups sitting down together to talk about that. You certainly saw it with our community affordable housing plan. And there's absolutely no better way, I think, to get the community involved than to work with all of these groups and to come up with something that works for the entire community. The challenge I see is in these stakeholder groups to remember that you're there for an overall focus, and that everybody needs to remember that and not just be speaking about your own particular need, but the greater good of the entire community or the project or whatever it is that you're working on. So I definitely see this as something we should continue to do, and I would really like to see us lift up our efforts in this arena around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and have more conversations in our community around that issue.
Thank you. All right. Rebuttal or comment?
Yeah. I agree with Mayor Andrus. I would just like to add that For instance, Missoula, Seattle, Boise, they've all been successful with these new city clubs. They come together once a month. They meet for a couple hours. It's very collaborative. There's a different policy topic every month, and it's a place where people can be heard. They can understand different perspectives, and essentially they can compromise, as Mayor Andrus said, and find solutions that are best for the community. I'm experienced in this area. I've worked in it practically, and I would love to see that implemented here within the city of Bozeman. Thank you.
Others that want to comment? Okay, well, now it's your turn.
Excuse
wait
me,
a minute.
I think
sorry,
still...
Zach. I didn't see you raise your hand.
Just a couple words, maybe.
Okay.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So, yeah, this question is actually really personal to me. I was a pastor for a while, and now I'm a member of the Jewish community. That's another story for another time. But we've been targeted in recent years, too, and so I've experienced this very personally. And I've long said that essentially if enough faith groups could get together and work together, we could change the world. And I believe that 100%. The civil rights movement was basically born in the backs of bookstores and in church pews, right? So it's a really powerful mechanism. And as social services in all across the country have been gutted in the last decades, then basically it's left to community groups to fill the gap. So they're crucial. And they're often on the front lines. And I think as a city, we can do a continually better job at making sure that we reach out and we see leads and see opportunities for social service amongst those groups. So that's why I actually, the logistics didn't work out, but I was working on organizing a group of faith leaders to talk about local issues because I'm here to already be doing the work before I'm elected. And a few years ago, I also traveled to Washington, D.C. to work with advocacy days, and there were thousands of us from faith groups to learn how to do political advocacy. And we went up to Capitol Hill and lobbied for Voting Rights Act and for equal rights. And we learned from people like Dr. William Barber, who's running the Poor People's Campaign, about how to change things through faith. So it's a huge thing. What I'll tell you is that faith will inform my work every day. Not in terms of whose God is right or whose book is correct, but because the driving force of so many faith and community organizations is to care for our neighbor. And nothing really describes my candidacy better than that phrase. So,
my apologies, Zach. Thank you so much for being, all of you, so gracious tonight. There's a lot of you up here, and I'm trying to keep you straight. So anyway, thank you for keeping me straight. All right, it is now your turn, and we'd love to have questions from you. You might want to go to the Voter's Guide if you didn't hear any of those questions addressed specifically. Those might be some questions you might want to pursue, but we are very interested in having you ask questions, so it is your turn. Yes, and would you stand, please, so that we can hear you?
So as a young person and a Bozeman native, I'm a little concerned, and I'd just love to hear from the candidates how they would consider addressing and how the city plans to address scooter regulation.
Okay. What I want to say is that we really are focusing on the subject at hand tonight, which is social justice, equality, and fairness. And you hold on to that question. And if we have no more questions around the topic at hand, I will get back to you. Okay?
I just felt it related to fairness and equality because access to transportation as a young person.
Okay.
I felt that it might be an important issue.
All right. Okay. Thank you very, very much. Does anybody want to address that? We will address it because nobody else asked a question. So go ahead.
Obviously, scooters are in high demand by millennials. They're actually a lot of fun. I don't know if any of you have ridden them or not, but when I'm in D.C. for meetings, whether I'm at the Pentagon or going to the White House or Congress, I actually ride a scooter to those meetings. They emit fewer greenhouse gases than cars, obviously. They're usually more efficient. They're not as expensive as well. So, but the problem is here in Bozeman, they aren't wide enough, is my understanding from Deputy Mayor Chris Mell. They aren't wide enough for us to regulate. It's once again another state-related issue. So I think the state must regulate them. If they're not going to, they need to let cities. The state should also require the use of helmets. This is obviously a public safety issue. I think in our downtown area, there should be no sidewalk use, and we must enforce that. And lastly, on a personal note here, I actually know an ER doctor. I think she said last year in her ER, the number one rise in accident-related visits, I think, were related to scooters. So obviously, these are becoming a public safety issue, and we need to address that here in Bozeman. Thank you.
All right. So, Mark, you can go next if you'd like to answer that question. Again, I do want to remind you all that we really are here for, and I heard you say what you said, but again, I do want to keep everybody sort of on target in terms of the theme of tonight. So thank you very much. Okay, Mark, go ahead.
And there is a good equity question here. The question is, who has equity in our transportation system? After housing, the next biggest expense for most households is transportation. AAA estimates that the cost of owning and operating a vehicle for a year is around $8,000. So if we can build a transportation system that gives people options, that allows a household to get by with one vehicle instead of two, that is the equivalent of raising, of lowering that household's rent by $700 a year. So yes, we need to build a transportation system that gives people options other than being required to operate a personal automobile for every trip. And if scooters are part of that solution, I'm all for it.
Okay. Go right ahead.
I'm essentially with them. The bigger issue here is we need a transportation system that works. We need a transit system where cars aren't the top priority. I've seen too many of these parked on the sidewalk, which means wheelchairs can no longer get by because you can't move them. They're often parked in places they shouldn't be, even though, you know, we've been trying our best to sort of avoid that. I'm just worried that the focus is on that as a cool new thing when really we're drastically lacking in terms of a post-car future and one that is ultimately accessible for people that need it, and that's a big equity issue. So.
Thank you. And next, Michael?
I answered
it
first.
You have answered. Okay. Yeah. Cindy?
I would just say that we regulate them the same way we regulate bicycles in this community, and they are not allowed on the sidewalks. So and downtown, so and you don't have to wear a helmet if you don't want to. I mean, that's up to you, but they are regulated as we regulate bicycles, and we are continuing to watch them and monitor them, and we'll review how everything is going probably next summer.
All right, thank you. And Brian?
I don't have much to say about the scooters. I mean, if there were, are there enough of them, do you think?
I'm mostly concerned about transportation in my city. So as an emerging transportation alternative, I wanted to address the city at large about how we might go about regulating it for the safety of those who use it and for the safety of those who might encounter death.
Oh, yeah.
When not using like Zachary
spoke
to.
Sure.
So thank you all for addressing this question.
Okay. Do we have another question? Yes.
I'd like you all to address the first question, which is about childcare, about there being a shortage of community of places for people, working people that have their children taken care of.
Okay, the first question, and Mike, you are on first.
Okay. All right. I think childcare is obviously an incredibly important topic here in the city of Bozeman. One, this goes back to partnerships. We need more innovative solutions, and we need to provide more childcare for working families here in Bozeman. Two, I know the county's working on this. Once again, this becomes a resource issue from a local government's perspective. I think we need to continue working with external partners on childcare and how we can provide more childcare for people here in Bozeman. And three, we need to work with the state of Montana to make it affordable. Because right now, childcare is a large percentage of people's income, and it's not very affordable here within the city of Bozeman. And so we need to develop those partnerships and work with those state and county officials to make sure that we not only have an abundance of childcare, but that it is also affordable as well. Thank you.
Okay, Zach? Oh, is there any rebuttal? Sorry. Any rebuttal here? All right, Zach, please.
Yeah, this is one I know personally. We've got a 2-year-old. It took us 2 years to get childcare for him for 3 days a week. It's very, very hard, and it's very expensive here. And childcare workers are paid nothing for sometimes having degrees in early childhood development. It's really, really hard. I've looked at the math on this forwards and backwards. It doesn't pan out very well. Basically, what happens is those who are better off can afford it, and the rest of us just don't get childcare. If we want to pay workers well, and we should, because they're doing a huge job, just like teachers. So I think what we need to do is... you know, we could spend a little bit of money and not a lot. And I think we need to do a feasibility study to see about the potential for a countywide universal child care program. I don't know if we have a big enough pool to pull it off, but we should find out. And if nothing else, then we need to push really hard at the state level to say, hey, we have people suffering and we need a statewide program. We need to extend our public education model to include child care so that it's available for everyone when they need it. And it's the most cost-effective way to do it.
Okay. Brian? Rebuttal, sorry, Cindy, thank you.
Thank you. So I don't think we need to do a feasibility study. We know child care is an issue in our community, and when we updated the Unified Development Code just this last spring, we decided to make it so that you could have a child care facility in every zone in the community. So we have we are addressing this issue. We see that it is a problem, and we are trying to work through that, through some of the zoning changes that we could make through the UDC.
Thank you very much. And would you like to speak also to your...
No, I'm finished. I have spoken what I wanted
Good.
To say.
Thank you very much. Mark.
I heard the other evening that it's cheaper to send your grown child to MSU for college than it is to send your two-year-old to childcare. That's a problem. From an economic development standpoint, from a prosperity standpoint, it's penny-wise, pound-foolish that many otherwise would-be productive workers in this community are kept home by the lack of availability of childcare. In fact, the city's recent demographic study found that that the lack of access to childcare is the number one factor that is keeping workers out of participation in the labor market. Affordable transportation is number two. So yes, I think that we do need to take action. I don't know what that looks like, but I think that Mr. Crum has suggested a positive first step.
Okay, Brian. Is there a rebuttal to anything he said? Okay, Michael, please, or Cindy. Nope.
Thanks,
we're casting it to Brian. Okay.
My better half, Lisa, she owns and operates a small business here in Bozeman, and she's got 30 employees during the high season. And she has struggled with this and had to make accommodations along the way, and it's a tough deal, tough nut to crack, especially for the small businesses. And so it's come up in conversations, kind of similar to healthcare. If maybe the smaller businesses in town, maybe under 500 employees, wherever you want to set that, under 400, under 300. If there could be a pooled effort to not only for child care, but not only for health insurance, but also for child care and any other type of benefits that are easier for the larger businesses to provide. So maybe, you know, homegrown in grassroots solutions like that. And it reminds me back with the communities, the community partnerships, and there's a lot of people out there that would probably like to take care of kids during the day. And I realize they need to be licensed, but... Just thinking out loud.
Okay.
Or am I?
All right. Rebuttal, please. Anybody? Mike, thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to concur with Mayor Andrus that I don't think we need a feasibility study here in Bozeman. We already know that child care is a serious problem here. We know it's too expensive. There's obviously a shortage of it. I think the big question becomes, what can we do from a local government public policy perspective to have a positive impact on the fathers and mothers in this community that are being held out of work? And I look forward to hearing about innovative solutions from many different people in the community. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody want to comment? Yes, Seth.
I should clarify. I mean a feasibility study, not to understand how bad the problem is. It's terrible. But to look at a universal child care program, my partner and I have spent countless weekends talking about, well, how do you do this and how do you make the math work? And we've set up sample budgets for centers and what would you do if you did one in a church? UMC has a similar kind of thing already going for Head Start. It just doesn't work. If you have three families making $35,000 a year, they can't split the salary of a child care worker between them and pay them well. The math doesn't pencil out. The only way to do it is to use the public education model, which is you use it when you need it for a small amount of time because we all need it and we spread the burden across everybody, and it really, really works. So,
third question. Everybody? Yes, please stand. Thank you very much.
Hi, first I want to thank you for putting yourself forward to run, because I feel nervous just asking the questions, being up there trying to answer questions when you don't know what's coming at you. I was a part of the CDOT committee this summer and worked extensively on gathering data, and I was just floored by what I learned. So without going into the details of that, if you had a chance to read it, one of the clear recommendations of CDOT is that a need for a comprehensive study of these issues, because as you're talking about gender pay gap disparity and you're talking about child care, there's this intersectionality of how this impacts.
So can I have your question, please?
Would you be in support of having such a study, why or why not?
All right. Thank you. very much. And Cindy, we're asking you to go first, please.
Thank you. Well, I think it's a good idea to have a study like this, but I think it should be led by the private sector. I think that the city would be happy to participate in some kind of a study. We would be willing to, I think, give data to the study that we had. I think we would be willing to participate, you know, be an active participant. But I think this kind of a study would need to be led by the private sector, because the city does not have the capacity in its funding or human capacity to be able to lead such an effort.
All right. Rebuttal from anyone? All right. So, Brian, you're next.
The question was, should there be a study to further to look into all of the issues that have been identified?
It's one of the recommendations from the report, is that there's a lot we don't know. And so having a study that looks at the intersectionality of what's happening to all these issues.
Okay. To Mayor Anderson's point, I guess it would depend on the cost and what we're looking at. But I certainly would think it would be a justifiable use of city resources to maybe not pay for the whole thing, but pay for some of it. I don't know how much we're looking at here. But it speaks to the heart of a lot of these issues that in this community, some of them are divisive. And I think the reason that they're divisive is because there's just not enough data out there. It's all just people's instincts and their stereotypes that are driving their beliefs and their thoughts on this thing. So the more data we can get out, getting back to the gender pay, and I mean, are there really jobs out there where there's a man and a woman doing the exact same thing and one's getting paid more than the other? We need to. So I think the extent that we can gather data on those and childcare data would be really good too. Everyone knows it's a problem, but to quantify those things. So I think it's a good cause.
Okay. Rebuttal? Comment? Okay. Michael.
So I don't know if you heard my discussion earlier, but I actually advocated for a private and public partnership study. My recommendation here would be to go to Montana State University and ask students, either in economics or public policy, to conduct a study for a very low fee, essentially. Kate Kaminsky's sitting here tonight. She's very involved in the education department. I was very involved in the public administration, public policy department at MSU. We can find students that know exactly what they're doing with great professors and conduct this study for a very low cost. I do agree that I think the private sector needs to help lead this. There's many different private businesses throughout the city of Bozeman, and we need to have a very good understanding of their leadership and involvement of this study so that we can help provide data from a government perspective. Thank you.
Any comments about what Michael has said? Mark, you're on.
Ending discrimination against women goes beyond just City Hall. It's a community-wide challenge and needs to be a community-wide effort. There are many stakeholders and institutions that are actively a part of that, and so I would support. But the city can and I think should provide leadership. I think that's a function of city government to provide citywide leadership, and I think that the city could do that in the form of convening a task force to following on the recommendations of CDOT to not only facilitate creation of a study, but then to also create an action plan and to see that action plan through to realization. And there's a good functioning model of how that could work with the community's affordable housing task force right now that's bringing in stakeholders from across the community. And by bringing in multiple collaborators and multiple institutions and a diversity of perspectives, I think we're most likely to achieve the outcomes that we're looking for.
Any comments? Zach.
So I think this also brings into sort of play the question of accountability for local government policy, which is to say that we don't really have a clear sense of objective quality of life factors happening in the area and how much policy is actually affecting them one way or the other. It's sort of vague right now. So I'd like to actually see that rolled into a full-time regular top-level office where we define objective measures of quality of life, including equity measures, and we tie them to local policy and study them and measure them continuously. It's time for us to have open data around all of these things, and it should just be a part of the way that city government functions so we know how we're doing and we can change it. And I'd also like to explore the possibility of giving some teeth to that by mandating that policy improve quality of life factors over time as a part of its mandate. So that would be how I would approach that. Let's bake it into the into the system and the way we do government. But so
comments.
I would just like to add that the reason I think we need the private sector to lead this study is because they essentially don't have to provide the data. So if we have private sector leadership working with other community partners and stakeholders to obtain this data, I think the study will be much more comprehensive, accurate, and then most importantly, provide deliverables or areas where as a community in the Gallatin Valley, we're coming up short. Thank you.
I think we have time for one more question, and then we need closing statements. Yes, please.
So with the exponential growth that Bozeman's experiencing and the long-term stamp that developers are having on our community, how would you suggest that the city set standards for developers to address these social and economic issues that we're talking about today?
All right. And on this question, Brian would go first, please.
Okay. Well, first thing that comes to mind is with the inclusionary zoning ordinance, there actually is already a requirement that 10% of dwelling units be deemed affordable in any residential development. Other types of development and how they would be held responsible for resolving the inequities that we've discussed tonight? Okay, well, to a large extent, but probably not enough. They are already required to meet a lot of standards and barriers to entry into Bozeman. I mean, some people would make the argument that it's too hard to build here and too hard, and there's too many requirements, But with regard to the social issues, I would be, you know, I'd like a requirement where if a big company from out of state comes in, they don't bring their labor force with them. They have to hire from here. All the good jobs, yeah, they bring in a bunch of good jobs. Well, they also bring a bunch of good employees with them, their own, from out of state. So I touted last time I ran, I wanted to see a requirement that, you know, that they have to hire from here, for example. But so we could... You know, it's a fine line. We don't want to scare good businesses away and good jobs away, but we certainly want to get... We're a magnet, they say. We're a magnet, so we got
to... seem to be a problem right now.
You're absolutely right.
Any rebuttal? Any comment? Hey, Cindy, you're on.
Thank you. Appreciate the question. We do have regulation. We do have standards in place today. And these issues that we're talking about today are huge issues, and they take the municipal government, the state government, and the federal government working together in order to solve them. There are things that the federal government needs to do in order for the municipal government to be able to move on some of these fronts. So until we're able to make some strides at the state level and the federal level, we just have to continue doing what we're doing and using the tools that we have in our toolbox to manage our growth and development.
Any comment about what she has just said? Okay, Mark, you are on.
We have an affordable housing crisis in this town because we, as a city, have made it devilishly difficult to build anything. And as a result, the supply of new units is not keeping up with the rate at which new people are moving here. So I think what we need, and to make matters worse, I think that through our Unified Development Code, we have skewed the rules in favor of building expensive freestanding homes at the expense of building more modest types of housing. So I think the first course of action is to take a step back and look at the rules and see if those make sense in a context where the average sales price of a home last month was over $500,000. I think that we can instead redirect our rules to incentivize the creation of more modest housing, remove our lot size minimums, provide some flexibility on setbacks, remove the prohibition and barrier that keeps more than half of the land in this half the residential land in this town dedicated for the exclusive use of freestanding single-family homes. And I think if we do that, that is a first minimum step towards addressing our equity and housing needs.
Comments?
Well, you're coming on that.
You actually are on.
Oh, okay. I'll just tack this on then. I'll combine.
So he can comment for 30 seconds and then make his own comment.
My comment is I've looked at the literature on housing extensively. There's no demonstrated relationship anywhere between deregulation and lowering housing prices. It simply isn't there. It's not a good strategy for it to work. And I'll tell you why. Because the housing market is working just like it's designed to function, which is to say that it's like healthcare. It's not designed to take care of needs. It's designed to turn a profit. And I don't say that with a lot of moral judgment. It's just how it works. And so developers didn't do that, they'd be out of business. So their incentive to stay in business is to generate profit in whatever way that they can. And right now, that's mostly luxury development, and not to provide affordable, good housing for people. That's where we're at. The answer overwhelmingly from the evidence is social housing. I've done the math, and our estimates are that if you built social housing in Bozeman, public housing, nice units, utilities included, two bedrooms would cost $700 a month. So think about what that saves for families. And the rent never goes up. And you don't get discriminated against. And your landlord doesn't let, you know, rats run in your place, which I've seen in Bozeman too often. So that's the way forward. We need to build social housing. We need to do public financing to make it happen. And it's something that we can do and get started on right away. So.
Okay. Anybody want to make a comment on what he just said?
If I may.
Yes, you may, Mark.
There is an abundance of solid empirical research that shows that land use restrictions do increase the cost of housing. And so I think as a minimum first step, we should, as first, you know, doctor, do no harm. Let's start there, and then we can reconsider what the market is and if we need to proceed with other schemes to support affordable housing.
Thank you. Cindy?
Can I ask that she repeat the question? Because I don't think it was addressed.
Can you repeat the question and keep it brief, because we are time limited? But if you could do that, Michael has asked for that, please.
So we're experiencing.
Would you stand, please? Thank you so much.
We're experiencing exponential growth in Bozeman. Developers are leaving long-term stamp on the community. How do we modify the stamp that they're leaving on the community to address many of the social and economic issues that we were talking about? So I know we have a lot of...
Could you just hold on that question and let it be answered? Again, I'm a little concerned about time. Could you do that?
But I want to go beyond what we have on the books already.
Okay.
Creative ways to extend how there can be these public-private partnerships for improving our community.
Thank you very much. All right.
I was going to rebut, but I'm going to pass.
I think we need to recognize areas for development, subdivisions, and most importantly, community nodes. We need smart growth in this town, and that is entirely within our control. Second, we're following our community plan in a way. It calls for increased bike lanes, better walking and walkability, more trails, alternative forms of transportation, the young lady that brought up scooters. Third, I think our planning office staff is seriously underappreciated in this community. We need to increase morale, increase wages, and increase the FTE within that office, because there's a clear line between development and planning. And I think we can do a better job within the community. Seattle, Boise, Salt Lake, they've all developed community nodes. We now have a community node on the west side for those of us who live here called the Marketplace, where we can walk, we can ride our bike there. These are incredibly important areas for growth, and they provide opportunities that otherwise weren't available in the past.
Comments on Mike's comments? All right, fine. Thank you so very much. Thank you all for asking questions. And now it is time for closing statements. And so we're going to begin with Cindy.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive. Just, okay. Yes, I'm in
just,
the rhythm.
You're in the right. You got the, I'm in the right. You're the right
I'm
number.
Really getting it.
Okay.
Finally,
okay.
Right?
Great. Well, thanks. Thanks, Roxanne. I've appreciated being here tonight. I appreciate the questions. The issues that we have discussed tonight are hard issues, and they're hard because at their very core, these are human issues. Issues of gender, equity, and safety are community-wide problems that require community-wide analysis and action. The city does not have these resources or the personnel to access the data or to undertake this task alone. But if I am reelected as the mayor, I pledge to continue to take concrete steps to work on these issues where we can, to work with other stakeholders in the community to address these pressing issues, to provide advice and data where needed, and to follow best practices to address harassment harassment and discrimination in our workplace, and continue to work with Haven and the Gallatin County to address domestic violence and sexual assault against women of all ages in our community. And most importantly, to lead by example. I'm proud of the work that we've done, and I hope to continue doing it.
And Brian is next.
Okay. I've never been on the commission before. I have no experience there. I have been the chair of the Affordable Housing Board for over 17 years. I've got 33 years experience of just living in Bozeman, 23 and a half years of working in the finance department, learning the ins and outs of the bureaucracy. And so I'm not here because I want to be a politician per se, but because I think our city government can be better. And so that's really what I'm about, is better government. I want the government in the town where I'm living and going to probably die to be the best that it can be. And so better government to me means doing a better job of listening to you, doing a better job of managing your tax money, doing a better job of getting along with the county so that maybe we don't have to spend money on building two of the same thing, doing a better job and making sure that we listen to all of you and not just the property owners, the renters as well. Let's see. So all the issues mentioned, affordable housing, taxation, growth, sustainability, gender pay, water conservation, that they're all important issues. I promise to tackle them head on. And doing that, I'm going to make sure that we listen to you all the way. We're going to question the answers and to make sure that you're in the driver's seat as we move forward. And thank you. And I promise to listen to you.
Mark, you are on.
So I began my city commission campaign on the premise that we hold much in common within this community. And conversation after conversation across the width and breadth of this community has affirmed that as a community, we value civility. We value fairness. There's pride here in our vibrant middle class. And we appreciate the natural world and the beauty that surrounds us. And as a city, I believe that we can keep these things as we grow, but we can't have everything. We can keep these things that are most important, but it's going to require some compromise. So if privileged to serve as your city commissioner, I would commit myself to facilitating a community conversation to find out and come up with agreement and consensus about where it is that we can agree to compromise so that as a community, we can keep and maintain the things that we value most. Thank you.
Hey, Mike.
I just want to thank everybody for coming tonight and all of the community support. As I said earlier, my team and I have knocked on 25,000 doors of citizens here in Bozeman. We've learned a lot. It's an incredibly humbling experience. I want to thank the Bozeman Daily Chronicle and then Greg Finley and Sarah here for their endorsements with the Sunrise Movement. Lastly, I just want to emphasize that I've spent the last 13 years trying to get ready for this. I've worked for government agencies at the local, state, and federal level. My master's and PhD are in the field. I've volunteered in a dozen community service positions, and yet the smartest people that I've met and know are those of you sitting here in this room and the people's doors that I have knocked on. So thank you for all of your wisdom, teamwork, and sharing your innovative policy ideas, and I hope to see you voting for me here in the near future. So thank you very much.
Zach.
Thanks. You've heard enough about me and what I'm doing. I want to tell you about a family I know that I talked to that sought me out during the campaign. They just recently found out that they accidentally made too much money between their four jobs. They try to carefully monitor their income, and they accidentally made too much. And their disabled child lost health insurance because of it. And so I was working with them, having once worked in a pharmacy, to try to get their prescriptions down and do everything we could to help them navigate social services. And I have seen story and story like that in Bozeman. And I've shared some of them, too, to kind of raise awareness about that. And the thing that amazes me the most about this town is it's the folks like that who are so optimistic and want to give so much back when all I see is that we're just pushing them out. And it's not that it's any one person, it's just what's happening. But it seems to me that the folks who have the least tend to be the most generous. And I've been so amazed to see that. They are more hopeful than I've been. I tend to get a little cynical. And I'm just so proud of what's here. And I hope that we don't miss the opportunity to use all of our potential that we have. And that's why I'm running. It's for those folks. So thank you so much for coming out tonight. Really appreciate it.
I just want to remind you that voting needs to happen really quickly. There is an opportunity to vote by mail, and there is also, of course, the opportunity on November 5th. Ballots can be hand-delivered to the election office in the county courthouse or the finance department of the city, which is very interesting to me. No later than 8 p.m., 8 p.m. on November 5th, and please note that it is our understanding that any ballot received by mail or by hand after 8 will not be counted. I want you to join me by, first of all, I want to thank all of you. This was a brand new format for me, and we finally got in the rhythm when it was just about over. But I really appreciate your graciousness. It's been wonderful to be with all of you tonight. And so let me reintroduce them to you, and then I want a big hand. So we have two people running for mayor, Brian Lemires and Cindy Andrus. And we have three people running for city commissioner. We have Michael Wallner, Zachary Crum, and Mark Egge. And would you give them a hand, please? They are doing hard work. It's been my pleasure to moderate tonight. Thank you so very, very much. I want to thank Amy Strader, who's a pastor here. And thank you so very, very much for hosting us here tonight at the United Methodist Church. And thank you all for coming. And vote, please. Thank you. And thank you all very much, and good night.